Morning, everyone. It's lovely to be here in Ashland. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, dearest Mother, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. Something that I've been writing and thinking about in the last couple of days, titled "The Good News." Friedrich Nietzsche once wrote that God is dead, meaning that we seem to be dying to the idea of God or the gods. He was a neoclassical scholar. It was as if the idea of God could die off in mankind, that ultimately God was only a thought. It is a false premise because God created man. Man did not create God. And God did not create the universe like a wind-up toy and let it unwind by itself, insulated from its creator. Rather, God is constantly expressing his qualities throughout all creation. In the great beauty and intelligence of design of this universe, the qualities of tenderness, mercy, justice are constantly evolving. For the concept of evolution has embedded in it the idea of God. Otherwise, what would drive evolution? The word evolution itself implies improvement, progress, and advancement. It cannot be a force that is dumb and blind, but driven with great purpose. An intelligent force acting to improve and advance creation is entirely consistent with the idea of what God is. In fact, God is bursting all around us, for those who would have eyes to see and ears to hear. This is not just sentimentality, but an undeniable fact. That this intelligent force exists within a seeming discordant symphony of forces that are moving in opposite directions of progress, beauty, and perfection does not negate this evolutionary force. Rather, it highlights it and proves its durability. That it is not an idea that can be denied or a force that can die out. God is, beauty is, and evolutionary force is. This world is a great play, a magnificent stage to demonstrate the power of evolution that cannot be denied. Man may be tone deaf to the evolutionary strains playing all about him, but he only adds to the chorus of confusion when he responds to the opposing forces and does not train himself to attune himself to the uplifting notes being played. In man, more than any other part of creation, that is guided more or less by instinctive programming, in man there is a battle for the heart and for the mind. The human being has the capacity to play out the good and the bad, the high and the low, due to his intelligence and free will. In man there is not only an evolutionary force, but involution, or the capacity for him to go within himself and know new states of consciousness not available in the material creation alone. This capacity for involution represents the greatest frontier of exploration in man. Involution refines consciousness to such a degree that the ultimate expression of God finds fulfillment in man. All the subtle, powerful strains of divine vibrations may be known and so transfer man that man is no longer man. Rather, man becomes an expression of the divine. This may seem a fantastical notion to many. Yet, in the mere technical evolution of the past 100 years, we take as commonplace today what would seem fantastical science fiction for a generation, for a century-old generation? Would it not be short-sighted to deny something so wonderful, beautiful, and life-changing as involution? Seeing from an evolutionary and involutionary perspective, there is so much evidence of God that it cannot be denied. When there is confusion about the existence of a benign creator, most often comes when the counter forces to evolution and involution are at work. Suffering, death, disease, cruelty, and deprivation. Why are they all here if God created all? In this material creation, everything has its opposite. The magnet has its two poles, one of attraction, the other repulsion. In a play, there is an antagonist and the hero at odds with one another. These contrary forces are required for there to be a creation, a play, if you like. The truth is, this world is a tremendous demonstration of the ultimate power of God. Growth, heroism, finding of beauty and joy, serving one another are all ways to express God. This is done with a backdrop of resistant forces, all adds to the greater strength and expression from progressive forces. The greater the darkness, the greater the light. A hero's journey only finds fulfillment when he has overcome all obstacles. The parable of a seed. A seed sown into the ground only perceives the darkness and denseness of the earth all around it. Yet, through some intelligent force, there are shoots that burst from the skin of what had previously defined the seed. Some reach deeper into the earth, others stretch towards the light. A titanic struggle ensues to establish the seed as a tree. The seed draws its strength from the earth, yet the earth is a resistant force to the seeds needed for the light. Upward it grows, the tender shoot. Upward grows the tender shoot until it bursts into the light. Then the sun, moisture, and air of what is above spurs on even greater growth, and the soil remains the foundation that makes for a tremendous tree. In various stages of growth, even when the shoot has broken free of the dark earth, it may contend with shadowing from other trees. Only when it grows past the canopy of others can it enjoy the direct light of the sun. Now, when the seed is deep in the soil, who would guess that it would become a redwood, a fruit tree, or any other seemingly endless creations of nature that seeds miraculously become? You see, it is not the failing of the soil or the seed that it appears so little and helpless buried deep in the earth. When the mature tree is known, the entire process demonstrates the fantastic power of life. And you, my friend, are just such a seed. You can be buried deep in darkness, seemingly lost in the density all around you. And yet, there is an evolutionary and involutionary force within you that cannot, will not be denied. The seed waits for spring, the right conditions to be activated in its higher calling. All the potentiality is there, latent, in the seed the whole time. There is an intelligence that knows when it's the right time for the seed to seek something higher. An important difference with the evolution and involution of man versus a tree seed is that man has free will and has greater capacity to influence his growth. He can equally act to help or retard his progress. This is so important to realize. Man can add his own will and intelligence to the involutionary forces that are latent within him. This is the underlying premise behind all religious traditions and methods for living. It should be noted that this involutionary force cannot ultimately be denied. However, the course of evolution and involution can be stayed, corrupted, and distorted for short or long periods of time. The opposite is also true. The intelligence of man can be added to the native involutionary forces, and its growth towards light is vastly accelerated. Because of this free will and its effect on the individual, an individual's choices will also influence all those around him, for good or for ill. The movement or progress or regression has a cascading effect. The further those forces act unrestricted, then an exponential growth occurs. The great evils of the 20th century came about because the forces for doing what was right did not match the cruelty, hatred, and malice of the times. Eventually, the good was aroused in world consciousness, and the darkness that menaced all the world was beat back. However, those forces that seek to restrict the freedom and dignity are with us still. This struggle, whether we want it or not, is all around us and inside of us. We are best served to arouse the forces within and without that will take ourself and mankind upward towards its ultimate destiny and remove the suffering the world currently knows. Good news. A new day for a new man. And you are that good news. You are the new God-man. When you choose to seek the golden hues of light, the blue skies of heaven above, and the brilliance of our own stars shining for all the world to see. The good news is here to stay. It's a wonderful notion that there's an inevitability about the evolutionary forces and the involutionary forces that are at work within us. Evolution we can see all around us, and it's a wonderful progressive kind of force that expands. This is a great time of year with spring, where we see all of the... Are we all done? Speaking of evolution and the evolution of technology. So we have this wonderful springtime where flowers are coming out and there's new green and new growth on all the trees. And it's a wonderful time in which we're able to see this expansion of life. It's a deep mystery how these cycles within nature repeat themselves, and yet there's an ever new aspect to them. It's important for us to realize that that is deeply embedded in ourselves. That seed of consciousness, that seed of power is growing inside of us. So oftentimes we feel this sense of isolation and being cut off from everything else and from the infinite creator from which we have come. And yet, to know that this evolutionary force is growing inside of you, stretching out for the light. And so oftentimes what gives us pain in this life, what gives us suffering in this life, is our desire for more light and in the moment not feeling that we're getting it or getting it as much as we would like to. So the encouraging aspect that there's this tremendous growth happening inside of you, that when you're dissatisfied with this world, when you're dissatisfied with yourself, when you're dissatisfied with the people who are around you, to take that inside and begin to notice this involutionary kind of process beginning to happen inside of you. It's such a tremendous story of when the Buddha was taken out and he was going through his garden. It was his Garden of Eden. Everything was perfect and had always been perfect. And his father had seen to it that nobody who was of older age or illness, because it had been predicted that if he got to, I believe it was his 21st year, without seeing any suffering in this world, then he would go on to be a great king. His father, being a king, naturally wanted him to be a king. But that if he encountered any difficulty at all before that time, that his course would be very different. He would renounce the world and he would seek realization. So his father was trying to influence it, but other forces acted that were stronger than the father. And somehow when he was going along in this perfect garden, his driver driving the chariot, And there, next to the road, was a man who was diseased, all covered, but he had never seen disease, so he had no word for it. And he said to his driver, "What is this? This fellow looks terrible. He has sores, and he is moaning and groaning." And he said, "Well, sire, this is disease." "Does it happen to everybody?" "Yes, to everybody." "Even to kings?" "Yes, even to kings." So further they went, and he's deep in thought when suddenly he saw somebody who was very wrinkled in their skin and bent over, and he said, "Stop, stop, stop. What is this?" "This is old age, sire." "Does it happen to everyone?" "Yes." "To kings too?" "Yes, to kings too." They drove on further, even deeper in thought, and then they came along, and there was somebody who was completely still, lying on the ground, lifeless. "What is this?" "This is death." "Happens to everyone?" "Yes." "Kings too?" "Yes, kings too." Completely transformed his life and took him onto a new journey. And in a sense, disease, old age, and death remain out of our sight as well. It happens all around us, and yet some part of our brain pushes it off to the side. And so when disease happens within our body or somebody close to us, when old age begins to happen, again, to somebody that we know well or to ourselves, when death happens to somebody else, it takes us by surprise. Remember my mother, just very humanly and naturally, when my father was 82 and she was 81 and my father died, and she just was saying, "This is just not the way it was supposed to be." And yet, you look around and you say, "Well, it's pretty much how things are, you know." that's about the right timing in the current world cycle that we're in. I completely understood for me, it's not how it's supposed to be. There's a part of us that is eternal, that has eternal life within it. And when we apply all of our mind to this world, we project onto it what are godly attributes. This world should be well behaved. The lion should be able to lay down and calm. That there shouldn't be old age, disease, and death. We feel that way about it. And yet all the evidence around us shows that it's not that way at all. And so we have to come to that contention. And what the Buddha said is that our attachment to this world, that it ought to look different than it is, that these things should not exist in it, is what keeps us bound. That we have to free ourselves from that attachment. We have to learn to draw the life force back in, into this body, into the spine, into the higher regions of the brain. And when those are activated, that brings us into a new state of consciousness. That brings us into a state of nirvana, the supreme state of awareness, that now you realize that as a soul, you are eternal. This body is not. And it was a misidentification to think of this body as being eternal, that this body gets older. You could take a bath, and a complete bathtub full of oil, of Olay, or whatever expensive products are sold behind the counter, and you'd still get old. It's going to happen. And that eventually this body will die. And from dust it comes, and from dust it returns. That's the natural cycle of life. The whole issue of suffering is that we have misidentified where perfection exists. And as human beings, since we exist in a human body, we identify with this human body, we project it out onto this world that perfection should be here and should be in this body. It's a natural thing to do, but it creates suffering. As a result of that suffering, we can go into a great period of doubt. We become angry. We go through a grief process. And from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she identified some different stages. And first, there's denial. So we keep on acting as if underlying we expect perfection in this world, but it doesn't exist, but we keep on expecting it. That's denial. And then we go into a period of anger, because we're mad that it's that this is actually so. We finally break through the denial, and then we're mad, and we can be very mad with God for a long time that this world isn't perfect as we think it should be. This body isn't perfect as we think it should be. And then we can go, and when the anger doesn't do any good, then we can go into a depression, and we can just feel that it's all worth it. Ramakrishna, a great saint in India, was talking about a young man who used to come and see him, and he was very dissatisfied with the world, very, very dissatisfied, and he ended up taking his own life, that he is so despondent and dissatisfied with the world. And he said this was a spiritual crisis that this young man was passing through, and that it was that's actually can be a positive thing to be despondent about this world if we see ourselves moving through a process. If we think that's it, that's the sum total, then it results in a complete feeling of powerlessness, helplessness, hopelessness, and that's when people choose to take their lives, when they finally encounter that life is suffering. And if you think, well, that's all that it is, then why not take the life? That's the cause for suffering. Once again, it's the material mind's interpretation of the facts. So when you move through that depression, then you come into a greater state of acceptance. Greater state of acceptance. And when you accept, you know, this world is imperfect. There's wonderful things about it. There's beautiful things about it. And there's ugly, there's terrible things about it. And to one degree or another, that will always be true. I can never depend on this world. I can never depend on this body. I can never depend on that for my ultimate happiness and perfection. And we come into an acceptance of that. And then we learn to draw the mind inwards. And then we set ourselves onto the involution of life. That is then the evolution. And the ultimate, for mankind, it's the ultimate evolution of the mind. And then we enter into the involution. And the involution draws us inside. Perhaps that we have some experience where we're lifted up, where we feel something new in our lives. You think of the story of Jesus and Nicodemus. And Nicodemus was this lovely, lovely Pharisee who was a teacher and wonderfully attuned man. And he recognized the truth of what Jesus was teaching, but some parts confused him because, again, he concretized the speech that Jesus was giving. Jesus said, you have to be born again. And he says, what? Can a man go back into his mother's womb and get born again? You know, that's a material interpretation. That's a body interpretation. He said, no. That which is born of the body is the body. That which is born of God, of spirit, is spirit. So you have to understand my words are not about this material creation. They're about a spiritual creation. And to be born again means that you go through a transformation. And through that transformation, your entire sense of your being, as I wrote in here, man is no longer a man. Through that transformation, he becomes something different. It's an evolution, involution, transformation that goes on. Your entire consciousness begins to get transferred. Mother talked about through the baptism of blood that is talked about. And that identifies a very specific situation where your consciousness is being transferred from your physical being to your astral being. And it's an interesting thing because your astral heart beats on your right side, your physical heart on the left side. And that she could hear this gurgling of blood and she could feel it was painful for her. And it was this transfer of consciousness. When your heart center begins to open, it can be very, very painful at times because not only do you get this fresh infusion of spiritual consciousness, but it has this way of purging out everything from the human, all the losses that we've had, all the pain, all the emotional suffering that we've been through starts to get purged. And in order for it to get purged, it gets brought up to the surface. And so we have this constant purging going on, which is tremendously challenging and painful. And if we choose to, and some people do at that time, they cut it off. They say, this is too much. I don't want to deal with this. And they put parameters around the heart and they close it down tight. And one individual who did this and continued meditating, and what they wanted to do is they wanted to have this full experience, but they didn't want to have to go through everything that that entailed. And so they entered into a very quiet state of the mind, but it was a dead state. There was no life to it. It was being conscious, but it wasn't. It was only being consciousness of a lack of kinds of stimulation to the brain. There's no joy to it. There's no bliss to it. There's no feeling to it, because she had cut the feeling off. So if we want to go through that entirety of this transformation, we have to be willing, to allow whatever is there to come forward without fear, and to let it all move through us and to be purged through us. And this is an important stage of the process. And so when I was going through this process myself, there was this tremendous pain that was coming up within my heart center. And I knew that I wanted this heart center to open up, and it was as if there was pressure pushing from the inside, but there's a restrictive force on the outside. And that description of the seed, you know, you think of a seed or you think of a chick that's in a shell, and how hard that chick has to work to get that shell broken. And there have been experimental scientists who have said, oh, well, we'll help the chick, you know, and they start cracking the shell for it. The chick doesn't properly develop, and it dies as a result, because it needs that struggle. There's something in the struggle that stimulates the nervous system and to bring it into full expression, full maturity. And if it doesn't get that, it is born weak and it'll die soon afterwards. So there's something within the struggle within ourselves. And the thing that I was showing inwardly one time was that these struggles that we encounter take us to the limits of our own strength. In fact, we think we can't go forward. We can't do one thing more. And when we get there, we can collapse in despondency. Or if we want to evolve and to continue that process, we seek a deeper power, a higher power, as it's called. And through that, we open ourselves up to that greater power, and we grow spiritually. And it's the grace, or it's that divine power, that allows us to get through a certain situation. So we open ourselves to that, and these struggles that we have on the upward path, these are necessary things for us to develop ourselves. We'd all like to have it just handed to us. When I was a child, I would pray to God. I'd say, well, I want good grades and I want lots of friends. But I didn't want to have to do anything for the grades. I didn't want to have to actually study. I just wanted the good grades. I just wanted them handed to me. And of course, that's not how it works. So we have to, we get grace, we get support, we get the higher power, but we have to be involved with it completely and totally in this transformational process. And when we are, then these invisible forces, because we're stretched to our limit, we still feel like we're on our own oftentimes. We don't realize that these invisible forces are coming in and helping us to get through a particular situation. And sometimes we look back on our lives and say, I don't know how I made it. I didn't know how I did that. And I can't even imagine now that I could do that all over again. If you had the situation, you would get the grace and you would feel the grace. If you don't have that situation, grace isn't needed. You don't necessarily have that conscious access to it right then. You're very utilitarian in your mind. And so you can feel like, I could never, ever, ever do that. This wonderful devotee who's up on Vancouver Island, and he's had a debilitating MS down for many years now. And he's in a position now where he needs a lift to get him out of his bed and into his wheelchair. And he's a wonderful soul. He likes to let other people know what it's like to face a world where you're confined to a wheelchair. So he took one of the city council people on a tour. He says, "I'm going to take you to tour. You meet me here at a certain time." And when the fellow showed up there, John had an extra wheelchair for him. And he says, "You get in the wheelchair." "No, what will people think?" "Exactly, get in the wheelchair." He took him all over town. They took him to a public theater that's there. And he took him into the bathroom, and he's looking at the stall, and he's in the wheelchair, and he says, "Well, how do I get from here to there?" And he says, "Exactly." So he was educating him by taking him around. So he's a wonderful soul like this. So we were talking, and I says, "Well, how are you doing with all of this?" He says, "Well, I'm doing all right." I said, "You know, 10 years ago, when I first knew him, he was on crutches. And he could walk. It's some difficulty, but he could walk. He didn't need a wheelchair." I said, 10 years ago, if you'd seen yourself in this position where you're at now, what would you have thought?" He says, "I couldn't have done it. And yet you tell me you're okay now. You know, it's not the preferable situation. Nobody would say that. But he could handle it. He could do it. He couldn't see that far. If he'd seen where it was going now at that time, he would have felt overwhelmed, that it was hopeless, maybe life wasn't worth living. He didn't feel that way now." And so this is important, because no matter what life brings to our doorstep, we get sufficient grace to meet that situation and overcome it. When you know that, then you can be fearless. Not at an arrogant, egotistical, "I can do anything" kind of thing. You just have that firm faith and confidence. Whatever God brings to me, no matter how bad it gets. One woman who had been wanting to come to meditation services for many years, and she had had cancer and she had had chemo, and it seemed like every time I was up in Canada for service, she was in the hospital. And so then she sent word and asked if I would come and see her. And I said, "Of course." And she's in the hospital. She's in the last 2 weeks of her death. And we did some forgiveness work, because there were some things that she had regrets. One regret about herself, and one that she was holding a grudge still against somebody else that she just couldn't let it go. So we did the forgiveness exercises with her. And when she was done, she felt clean. And she said, now I'm ready to go." She says, "I'm just worried though. Now, here's this woman. She's bloated up about 3 times her normal size. Her skin is greenish cast and no hair, not a stitch of hair. She's been going through this chemo treatment. And just about as bad a condition as you could possibly imagine for a person. And she's got this big smile on her face, you know, having done this forgiveness work. And she goes, "But I'm kind of worried about how bad is it going to get? Will I be able to handle it?" Now, most people would look at her and say, "How can she handle this? This is too much. It's too much." And yet, again, when I ask her, "How are you doing with given all of this?" And she says, "I'm doing good. I'm doing good." So we look at these circumstances that different people are in. It's not the preferred. It's not what we'd want for them. But there's grace that's there to support them. And whatever it is, whatever situation we might be given, there is always that grace. There's always that strength. There's always that inner direction if we're listening and we're open to it. It all comes flowing in. And where depressed people have difficulty is they lose faith. They feel insulated and isolated in their life. They feel cut off from friends, from family, and most importantly, from God. And when you analyze it, when you get into it with them, there's a tremendous disappointment and anger that life should have evolved this way, that I should be in this situation. And what do we do when we get really angry? You know, a child will hold its breath. "Okay, then, if I'm not going to get my way, I'm going to hold my breath." Go for it. You know, it might last a minute or so, and, you know, the breath will all come flowing out of there. It doesn't change the situation. So we get like that emotionally. Okay, I'm going to withhold as punishment to God for doing this. This isn't how we exactly think it out and reason it out, but it's emotionally. As punishment to God, I'm going to hold my breath. I'm going to withhold myself from God. And the truth is, all we do is we end up punishing ourselves. We don't get the comfort. We don't get the grace because we've closed the door. So to open the door and to keep it open, this is the trick. Fear, disappointment, anger, it all closes the door. To open the door and keep the door open. Keep that feeling of flow going where you feel that divine current, that divine energy constantly moving through you. And then that evolutionary force will be greatly accelerated. This is a really an exciting thing, that we can accelerate our evolution and our involution. Genetic changes and things like those are all physiological. Those take more time. Those take more energy. But this involutionary process is a thing of consciousness. And things can change quite quickly there. We can prove that to ourselves. There's a story, it's a terrible story in one way, of some parents who are notified that their child had been killed in war. And, oh my gosh, you know, you can just imagine what tremendous kind of feeling of grief came up over them. And 2 weeks later, they got another notice. Oh, I'm sorry, we made a mistake. Different person, had the same first name, last name, and middle initial. And clerical mistake, and your son is fine.
Wow.
Now, can you imagine the highs and the lows that go with that? How ecstatic they would feel. All of it was predicated on an idea. No outward reality there at all, but an idea. Your son has died. Your son is alive. And just the swings of highs and lows there. Consciousness can change so quickly. Much easier to modify than genetic programming and all the kinds of things we have to contend with in this very dense, thick material creation that we find ourselves in. So that we can accelerate our involutionary process quite quickly. We can retard it quite quickly, too. We can get into a state of despondency. We can get in a state of anger. We can get in a state of rebellion. And that's that. And that it's tough, but it can be reversed so quickly. And with meditation and training our minds to get inwardly focused, we can really get on a high-speed bullet train for that divine place of realization. Now, it seems like a long time when we're doing it, because we all want it just like that. But really, it can take a very, very short amount of time before we get there. So there's from the autobiography of a yogi, there's a wonderful writing there by Sri Ananda Mohan Lahari, Lahari Mahasaya's grandson. And so he writes this. The text of the Bhagavad Gita, or any scripture, is part of the great epic of the Mahabharata, which possesses several knot points. Keep those knot points unquestioned, and we find nothing but mythical stories of a peculiar and easily misunderstood type. These are true for all the scriptures. Keep those knot points unexplained, and we have lost the science which the East has preserved with superhuman patience after a quest of thousands of years of experiment. It was the commentaries of Lahari Mahasaya which brought to light clear of these allegories the very science of religion that had been so cleverly put out of sight in the riddle of scriptural letters and imagery. No longer a mere unintelligible jugglery of words, the otherwise unmeaning formulas of Vedic worship have been proved by the Master to be full of scientific significance. We know that man is usually helpless against the insurgent sway of evil passions, But these are rendered powerless, and man finds no motive in their indulgence, when there dawns on him a consciousness of superior and lasting bliss through Kriya. Here the give-up, the negation of the lower passions, synchronizes with the take-up, the assertion of a beatitude. Without such a course, hundreds of moral maxims which run in mere negatives are useless to us. Our eagerness for worldly activity kills in us the sense of spiritual awe. We cannot comprehend the great life behind all names and forms just because science brings home to us how we can use the powers of nature. This familiarity has bred a contempt for her ultimate secrets. Our relation with nature is one of practical business. We tease her, so to speak, to know how she can be used to serve our purposes. We make use of her energies, whose source yet remains unknown. In science, our relation with nature is one that exists between a man and a servant, or in a philosophical sense, she is like a captive in the witness box. We cross-examine her, challenge her, and minutely weigh her evidence in human scales, which cannot measure her hidden values. On the other hand, when the self is in communion with a higher power, nature automatically obeys, without stress or strain, the will of man. This effortless command over nature is called miraculous by the uncomprehending materialist. The life of Lhari Mahasya set an example which changed the erroneous notion that yoga is a mysterious practice. Every man may find a way through Kriya to understand his proper relation with nature, and to feel a spiritual reverence for all phenomena, whether mystical or of an everyday occurrence, in spite of the matter-of-factness of physical science. We must bear in mind that what was mystical 1,000 years ago is no longer so, and what is mysterious now may become lawfully intelligible 100 years hence. It is the infinite, the ocean of power, that is at the back of all manifestations. The law of Kriya Yoga is eternal. It is true, like mathematics. Like the simple rules of addition and subtraction, the law of Kriya can never be destroyed. Burn to ashes all the books on mathematics. The logically minded will always rediscover such truths. Destroy all the sacred books on yoga. Its fundamental laws will come out whenever there appears a true yogi who comprises within himself pure devotion and consequently pure knowledge. It's a tremendous thing when we begin to think that the complete emancipation of this entire creation of this world is going to happen. It cannot not happen. What can be changed is the quickness with which that evolution and involution occurs. And there, each one of us plays a practical and important role. Without our participation in this involutionary process, the world is denied the spiritual power that is generated within each one of us. Every one of us is a creator, a co-creator with the divine consciousness. And when we create and when we attune ourselves to the divine consciousness, there is a vibration that is sent out that changes all those who come into contact with it, whether they are conscious of it or not. And so to feel the inevitability of your own realization, and that what is really required of you is a conscious attunement to the divine consciousness, however you encounter it, in whatever way you encounter it, to more and more attune yourselves to that. It's like getting onto the train that is headed for the destination that you want to go to. And all you have to do is stay on the train. Stay in attunement with the highest light that you know. And you will be inevitably taken to your destination. Get off the train, it's a different story. Get onto a train going the opposite direction, that's a different story. Stay on the train, it's inevitable. And when you feel that in yourself, it brings about a great sense of ease. There's still the intense desire for the goal. But a certain kind of fear, and which is actually based on a lack of faith, that this can happen for you, is happening for you. That's what goes away, and it's replaced by an inner assurance. So, I'm going to just stop there and then see if there's any questions or anything about the talk today or your own spiritual journey that we might discuss at this time. Oh, good. Everybody's perfect on their path. I'd love to see that.
Do you think that if you can either inspire or encourage another individual to go through that, that you in turn get something out of that? And if so, what do you think is the best thing to do when you're wanting someone else to?
Yeah, can we influence somebody else to go through it? And you know, clearly, yes, I think that, or we wouldn't all be sitting here together today. You know, that we can influence other people. For some people, this kind of a discussion would be happening in a completely foreign language. They would hear the words. Maybe they'd understand some of the words, but they couldn't relate to it. It doesn't resonate with them at all. There's no, if you take the seed analogy, and the seeds deep into the ground and dark in the earth, and one of two things, either the conditions aren't right for that seed to come about, or in this sense, because we're human beings, the seed can resist. Now, if it's just pure latent, you talk to somebody who has no resonance at all with anything of a spiritual life, of a religious life, and it just has no, there's not much you can do. But if somebody is resisting it out of fear, afraid that they're going to lose the things that they really want in this life, afraid to take a chance, afraid to that they're going to be humiliated in front of others, whatever it is that keeps them from moving forward, that person can be worked with a bit. You know, their better nature, their better angels can be called forward, and they can respond to it if there's enough of that motivation in order to bring it forward. If the fear takes over, or the doubt, or the anger, or whatever it is that they're working with, they can kill it. Not permanently, but for the time being, they can put it back into its latent state instead of its active state. And people do that. And sometimes they run the opposite direction. There's that wonderful story where a man looks and looks and looks for the doorway to God, and he searches the three worlds over, finding this. And finally, he finds the door, and there's seven steps that go up to the door. And he starts climbing up those steps, and he gets about halfway up, and he starts to take a step, and he's thinking, but what's behind the door? God's behind the door. What's going to happen if I meet God? I don't know. You know, it could be great. It could be bad. You know, maybe he's going to judge me. Maybe I'll disappear. Maybe I'll become dust. I don't know. And this kind of fear and doubt takes him over. And he very quietly tiptoes back down the steps. And he knows he can go anywhere in the three wide worlds, but there. And he'll studiously avoid it for as long as he can. So people, sometimes they get polarized to this, and they're not neutral to it. They're not, oh yeah, sounds like nice words, but I just don't get it, or I just don't rest. No, they'll polarize. They're angry about it. They're afraid about it. They push it away with everything that they have. So from that standpoint, then you're really, really fighting City Hall. And can you influence them? Then there are people who have resonance with it and they're growing with it, but it's kind of back and forth. And there you can really have an influence with somebody, first by your own example. And then maybe some encouraging words at the right time or some insightful comment. And they're wanting it, you know, and they're willing to absorb it. So those are kind of the different stages where we can interact. And can't beat a dead horse, so don't worry about it if somebody just has no resonance with it. Encourage them along. Always our own example is the best. Does that answer your question? Or, yeah.
I think there's also a maturity level involved in that, like as we grow. Like, you know, a young child you wouldn't get mad at if they had a temper tantrum or they refused something. But an adult, you know, you expect a little different thing from them. So there's also kind of a growth and maturity level involved in that as to how much a person can really take in and know, you know, like with the seeds ready or not.
And that's where the disappointment can come in greater, when you see the potential there for somebody and it just that they're too scared or they're too mad or they're too whatever and they're just pushing it away and you just see it. But if you just step through, you know, it's far better than you could ever know. Just step through, and that's the frustrating is when you see the potential there and the potential not getting realized.
You know, I'm really confused about something, and I probably shouldn't be. It's probably not something to be confused about. But let me just give the analogy of, maybe I don't like being overweight.
Yeah.
Okay, so I go, well, I know the things that make you gain weight.
Right.
You know, there's desserts and there's things with sugar and there's, you know, there's lots.
Right.
We all kind of know what's good for us. So even though I have this desire, you know, I really need to lose 30 pounds, I see the pie sitting there, the cookie sitting there. I might go way out of my way to get it even.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll get it and I'll go, I know I'm doing the wrong thing, but I just really want this right now. And so I'm just going to have it right now, and then I'll still lose 30 pounds, but
right.
I'll just be doing it later. Okay, so, you know, there's this little thought process that goes on that gets you
right.
the road to ruin.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with the spiritual path. So I've had enough God experience to know how wonderful it is to be in contact with God.
Right.
And I even know the process to go through to get it in contact with God.
Yeah.
So that's not a mystery. And yet I do things, you know, I pursue things in the material world that I even know at some level are actually going to take me away from that.
Right.
Contact with God. And yet I do them.
Yeah.
And I'm going, you know, there's all kinds of definitions of stupid. But, you know, when you're doing things that are in direct opposite of what's good for you, you know, that's got to be right up there.
Right.
And so I'm sitting here going, you know, what in the heck in a human being's makeup, you know, makes them do these things that are just, they know it's not good for them, and they do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, discover an easy solution for that, and you've destroyed the field of psychiatry right there.
No, right.
No, just
right.
It's we're complicated, but I think the easiest is there is a struggle going on. We see it all around us, and we see it inside of ourselves. There is a struggle that goes on around this evolution, and you see in the analogy of the seed. Deep down in the earth, if you said, okay, the seed is going to try to get up to the light, but it's got all that stupid earth all around it, and that makes it hard. And yet, that seed requires the earth in order for it to be able to generate itself. And it continues to be an important medium, but it's almost as if the resistance of the earth itself is needed in that struggle. So if you look at your same situation and say, okay, I want to accomplish this certain thing, and I know it's good for me. It's toward the light within myself. And I keep on encountering time after time. I make struggle with it, and it doesn't seem like I'm getting it. I'm not making the progress. Then we take that and turn it inside out and say, okay, but what is it inside of you that wants to struggle towards the light? There's something that cannot be destroyed by the darkness. No matter how many times you fail, you don't give up on yourself. So you could say from that standpoint that the light inside of you is stronger than the darkness because it's not getting destroyed by the darkness. It continues to exist. Now, it doesn't solve your problem immediately. But by shifting your attention like that from the what is the problem to the source of strength inside of you. See, we all, if David in the Old Testament, if he approached Goliath and he says, man, that guy's big. Where's the nearest exit at? He's given all the power to Goliath. But what does he have? What does he have confidence? He has confidence in God. He has confidence. He's a pretty darn good shot with this sling and these stones. He's standing his ground. His connection is with God. That's where he derives his strength from. When we transfer our mind from the Goliath out there, what seems like the Goliath, to God inside, then little David turns into a giant killer. So I think in there that our failures eventually bring us to that point where we feel defeated by something. And when we turn our mind inside toward God then, say, God, I cannot do this, that opens the door. So their struggles broaden our spiritual growth. It infuses new strength and new grace into us.
The actual act of saying that you can't do it.
Yes. When it becomes spiritually focused. If I just say I can't do it, that's defeatism, isn't it? Then I'm going to give up, and the person who's trying to keep themselves above water, just paddling and say, I can't do this any longer, and sinks, they drown. That's not a good thing. That's not a positive. But when the person says, of myself, I can't do this. I cannot do it. I've tried everything in my power to do this, and I cannot do it. We break the isolation. That's been the problem. Because consciously or unconsciously, we put ourselves into a cocoon of isolation from God, most of all. And so we break that open. We open that door. That allows the infusion of strength, intelligence, resources, all to come flowing towards us that before had not been there. So it's not defeatism. It's surrender. And it has to be pointed towards God then. If we just say, oh, I can't do this, and then we just sink, nobody would say that's the hero's journey. that's defeatism at that point. So you take any example in your life, and you say, okay, I have to do this. You know, and a certain stage of development, of human development, it's important for children to be able to have confidence. I can do this. I can try and I can make a difference here. That's an important stage of human development. But in our spiritual development, we have enough confidence that we can open that door to God and say, I can't do this of myself. Of myself, I am nothing. Ultimately, and it is God who does the works. And that opens the door wide open. And then we feel that infusion, that grace, that strength coming in. So I encourage you, like around the weight thing, is to, am I, you know, with things that we're having a hard time accomplishing, there's that tendency to want to close ourselves off. Oh, I don't want to look at this. You know, I don't want anybody to see this. And that keeps us isolated. Is there some part, consciously or unconsciously, that you're keeping yourself isolated with that and saying, okay, God, this is a great adventure. This is my battlefield. And it may not be exactly the battlefield that I would like, you know, like I see the movies and I see the battlefield and it looks pretty glorious. I don't know. The fork and the plate, I don't know. That's not exactly the battlefield I'd envisioned for myself, but here it is.
Right.
And it's powerful. And what tells us it's powerful is when we try to change it. And man, it smacks us back hard. And we go, holy cow, there's a lot here. I don't quite get it. But there's a lot here. And then we try harder. And then it smacks us back harder. Are we keeping ourselves isolated? And this is any part of our lives. Any part of our lives. And when we identify, you know, I really am. I think I ought to be able to do this. This should not be a big deal. It really shouldn't. It shouldn't be a problem for me. And yet it is. And so once we identify it, and then we open up the door, say, okay, God, let's do this together. I'm open. I'm game. What do we do now? And every step of the way, you put your complete reliance on God. And I'll be very interested to see.
Well, you know, my whole life I've liked to build things.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't figure out when I was building some things sometimes why I would get so angry. And I'd be really mad, you know, the nail would go in crooked,
yeah,
and the board wasn't straight, and I had it fastened down, and I'd have to unfasten it to get it squared, and I'm really getting mad, you know. And then we were building the shelter up at Cloud Mountain,
uh-huh,
and Larry and I came down, and I was working on that, and here I'm doing this great spiritual,
yeah,
work, you know, and I'm getting angry.
Mm-hmm.
And well, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And so in recent years, when I've done these projects, I go, okay, so God and I are going to do this,
uh-huh,
together. And
yeah,
I just turn into this, it's a weird description, but it's kind of like this bumbling idiot.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm just, I got my little hammer and my nails, and God and I, and we're, okay, God, we're going to put the nail in now, and we're going to put this screw in. And here's what's weird. I enjoy the process like,
yeah,
a thousand times more.
Yeah.
And the work is better.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a state I can always get in, but it's a little trick I've learned how to build things and really enjoy,
yeah,
building things.
Yeah.
And we just do it together. Now, I haven't been able to do that with the eating and some other areas,
mm-hmm,
but I think you might be able to transfer it. You know?
Absolutely. That's a skill that's transferable.
I was just going to say, and I don't mean to jump, mm-hmm, on this because I don't want it to sound like that, but and this is for everything that we do that we can't get past, is I think sometimes instead of diving into that spot where you think, oh my gosh, I guess I just can't conquer this.
Right.
We go into avoidance. We set it over here.
Right.
Because we know if we really wanted to do it,
yeah,
we can. So for right now, we'll have the pie because over here, we're pretty sure if we really want to do it, we can.
Yeah.
And that happens over and over and over again.
And that's a tempting thing to do, but what puts the lie to that is when you end up trying to do it and you find out how powerful of an opponent you have.
Right.
And you go, it doesn't move so easily. Even when I really want it to move, it doesn't. It's a little confounding to us because a part of us says it shouldn't be a problem.
Right.
Something I've been learning too is about you open the door to God, but also open the door to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're very isolated, and we're all God.
Yeah.
So when you open the door to other people, like the eating thing, or anything, and like you were saying, you know, it's so much better when you open the door to God. Like you're inviting someone else in. So like to get a partner with the eating thing, someone,
yeah,
you can call on, someone you can rely on, then you're not isolating yourself because we live in a world that's very isolated. Like we can pay for everything. We can pay for someone to cook for us. We can buy, you know, whatever we need. So we think we can live by ourselves, but human beings can't live by themselves.
Right.
We need other people. So that might be another avenue to, you know, open the door.
It's living as if your life could be published on the front page of the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And really feeling like, okay, what if that were true? And not what prefer it, but would that be all right?
What would you be proud of and what would you be not?
And even the things, even the things that we fail in is to say, you know, I mean, that's a very human thing to have happen. Okay, I'm working on it. There is nothing to be ashamed of, because shame is one of the greatest isolators that we have in our life. And we all have those pockets of places we'd prefer not to have published on the front of the newspaper. So to begin to have that childlike innocence and openness, I don't know. I'm not sure how to make this happen. And you're exactly right, Bobby, to open yourself up to... Opening yourself up to God doesn't mean just that. It's to the allness of life. Okay. Suddenly now I could take in some information where before I didn't even want to hear about it because I'm ashamed or I'm afraid or because I just don't think that I want to hear it right now. So I push it away.
And you're not the only person with that problem.
Right.
There's so many other people out there with the same exact problem, whatever that problem is.
So it's one of the great geniuses of AA is to be able to go and say, I have this problem. This is my name and this is my problem. It takes away that sense of isolation. And to have yourself received by other people is huge. It's huge.
Something I think is just so wonderful about this, you know, all of us who have a sincere intention of wanting to grow and wanting to expand and wanting to work through our stuff. One of the things that happens when we get into that place of surrender and really recognizing, okay, I need God's help, is through that comes this compassion for all the other issues that all the other people have.
Yeah.
And I just think that's something that I really feel like I notice when I'm around a bunch of fellow devotees, like mm-hmm. at the retreat,
mm-hmm.
is I just get that there's this real compassion that everybody has, because everybody there has a real sincere intention and a recognition that they've got their stuff that they're working on,
mm-hmm.
that they've been working on this whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And that compassion, I think, is just such a huge thing.
Yeah.
And I've experienced just, you know, with people in this room where I've felt our mutual compassion grow.
Yeah.
And it helps us help each other. Because if we're in this thing where we're going, well, you know, I have no problem with this, that, and the other thing that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just need to just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just a mess.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't accomplish anything.
Yeah.
But if we can go, well, you know, you've got this thing that's easy for me.
Right.
But there's a thing you're good at that's hard for me.
Yes.
And so I just really, I really like that. I think that's part of this community and maybe kind of what you're talking about, Bobby, is when we can connect with other people who care.
Yeah.
And we can go, okay, I'm really good at what you're having a problem with, and you're really good at what I'm having a problem with. It really elevates the situation.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. There's a book years ago by Jerry Japlosky that love is letting go of fear. And that fear is the opposite of love. And if we have fear, we don't have love. And the notion is that as you let go of fear, is when we let go of shame, when we let go of that feeling of isolation, love and compassion are natural attributes that are part of us. But that fear and keeps it all at bay. So when we can find that with each other, and we know the people that are pretty safe to do that with, and other people who we don't feel safe to do that with, but when we find those people who can be safe with it, there's a great sense of opening up. And it's a human expression of ultimately what we want with God. And sometimes it just depends on our nature, our makeup. Sometimes we find it easier to do it first with people and then we do it with God. Sometimes it's easier to do it with God and then that gives us the strength to do it with people. But the opening is the same. And there's a softening of the edges. It's a taking away of the hard boundaries and borders and sharpness and all those things that we can acquire, all in an idea of defending ourselves. But when we defend ourselves from all other people and from God, it's a pretty lonely place to be. Not a nice place to live.
You were talking about opening up your heart.
Yeah.
You know, the night my mother died, I woke up around midnight and I felt like I was having a heart attack.
Wow.
I felt this pain and this compression, you know.
Yeah.
And a feeling of suffocation. And I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got better.
Yeah.
All right. It didn't hurt. And I've been told in the past that that's like an anxiety attack.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm wondering if it's something maybe
mm-hmm.
non-like an anxiety attack. But maybe it might be what you're...
Yeah. So would you be interested in a little experiment around that?
Sure.
In front of God and everyone? Just to put yourself back in that moment, and not only getting up and meditating and breathing, all great stuff, but then feeling that says somehow that door of your heart could actually open, and both in front of you and behind you, and so that from behind you, you actually feel an infusion, a flow of a love that's actually beyond yourself. That love itself is loving you, and you open the door in front of you and you feel whatever is in there getting unlocked and just flowing out from you. And as you see that, what if anything, do you experience then?
Well, it feels like there was something that was, I don't know, constricted.
Yeah. Yes. I find that spirit is expansive. Ego is contractive. It wants to define, it wants to label, it wants control over. So it defines the boundaries. It comes against this expansiveness of spirit inside. And when we clamp it down to it, it creates a tremendous amount of pain. And so that's where the fear and the desire to control, this is too big, I need to control this, I need to hold on to this, let that go, and then feel that infusion of love flowing from behind you. Yeah. So let it out of its cage. It's not comfortable in there. Yeah, great. Okay. This is a way of closing up. Let us just think. Either closing your eyes partway or all the way. Just think of that great seed of life that's in your heart center. In the heart center, spiritual heart center, it's right at the center of your chest. Not to one side or the other. And then just feeling that seed has a wonderful light that is in it. Warm, expansive, compassionate, loving. And that it begins to broaden past the notion of just a seed. And that light grows and goes out through your whole being, goes out through your whole body. And warms your body. Makes you feel an inner assurance and a peace. And then to let that expand beyond that to this whole room and all the people in it. And to easily accommodate in your mind that wonderful glowing light, that feeling of peace, of joy, is filling this whole room and all the people in it. And then it goes on to expand out the size of this house and all the people in it. Just loving them, seeing the light in them and all the spaces. And then to let your mind grow out and out until you see this world as a bubble in space. And you see that same seed light glowing through this whole world. And you're loving this world from the place that you're looking at it from. And then you can go on and on and on, as vast as this universe, and see everything filled with that same light, that same love, that same joy. And then as an experiment, you can bring yourself right back into this body again and the confines of this body. And then you can let your consciousness grow again and expand out across the vast reaches of space. And you may be able to sense by comparing and contrasting those two states why we feel so confined at times and so isolated. We're essentially spiritual beings. And we deeply, deeply desire the freedom and the joy, the love of expansive spirit. And we can train ourselves to be an expansive spirit even while we're in this world. That we don't have to confine ourselves. You would find that 99% of the day, you don't need 100% of your attention on what you're doing. And that there can be a part of you that's always identified with the greater spiritual self. And how happy you would be. How much more balanced and in freedom you would feel. This is a part of your involution. Om is the name, it's the Amen, it's the Amin, it's the from around the world that describes that vibration, that feeling of being so expansive. So joyful. And may that always be your state. Om. Amen. Pronouns, I bow to the light within you.